Hello, everyone. Welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith, and the next voice you'll hear is John Steele. John, how are you doing?
Hi, Stuart. Very well, thanks. Hello, everyone. We're back again. We're doing quite a few consecutive weeks now, Stuart. I think this is, we're getting into a rhythm here.
Yeah, well, you know what they say. You just need playing time. That's all we need. We got into a groove. And we'll crack on with our weekly look at what happened in J2 this last weekend. All the talking points that came up from a very eventful weekend in the J-League. But before that, obviously, most people who listen to this podcast will be well aware of the Typhoon Hagibis, which made landfall in Japan on Saturday. And yeah, vast areas of the country were hit by record rainfalls and high winds, and that those two combined led to scenes of kind of devastation across the country, with flooding to large parts of Nagano and Ibaraki prefectures, blackouts in Tokyo and Yokohama, and around 300,000 households being affected by the typhoon. One of the most visible signs was the fleet of the Hokuriku Shinkansen, the bullet trains, being submerged in floodwaters. And the latest news that I saw say there was upwards of $9 billion worth of insurance claims that will be incoming soon. I know I speak for John, I know I speak for you when we say we'd like to pass on our thoughts to those that have been affected by it. And we personally know more than a few people that have suffered some kind of hardship due to Typhoon Hagibis. And yeah, just the football at certain times, John, is pretty unimportant. And yeah, we just want to pass on our thoughts to those people who've been affected, right?
Yeah, I totally echo your sentiment, Stuart. It's kind of contradictory that we're now going to spend sort of 45 minutes talking about something which doesn't really, football doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. But I think we have seen in the past that, when there are these kind of natural disasters and crises, people actually do need an escape or a release, something like football, some escapism more than ever. I think, obviously Japan's performance in the Rugby World Cup at the weekend cheered up a lot of people who, had a rough time, rough 48 hours or so. So, yeah, I hope everything gets back to normal for people as quickly as possible. And if the football helps people to take their mind off a crappy situation elsewhere, then that's a good thing, I think.
I totally echo those sentiments as well. Listen, before we hit J2 hard, just enough time to say that Japan beat Tajikistan 3-0 in a World Cup qualifier last night away from home, thanks to two goals from Takumi Minamino and a goal from substitute Takuma Asano as well. Japan maintained their 100% record, and they will make a trip to Kyrgyzstan in November as they attempt to continue their 100% record. But I don't want to talk about that because, quite frankly, that would send me to sleep, John. But what doesn't send me to sleep, usually, is J2. Depends on the team. I should probably state there first. Because of Typhoon Hagibis, the weekend schedule was kind of, it had to be staggered over 4 days. So we actually had J2 football on Saturday, Sunday, Monday and Tuesday. Before we get into it, the one game that didn't make the cut this week due to weather conditions and pitch conditions and area conditions was Omiya Adesia against Avispa Fukuoka, which was scheduled to be held at the NAC 5 stadium in Omiya, but storm damage around the stadium meant that the Omiya couldn't put the game on. As far as I know, at the time of recording, there are no concrete details as to when the rematch will be. I mean, it's a big game, John, when it will get replayed, because I think, as we'll come to during this podcast, it's Omiya are right in the thick of it in the promotion race, and so this game, whenever it is replayed, will have serious ramifications at the top of the table, won't it?
Yeah, that's right, and that there always seems to be an extra twist or a sting in the tail in J2. It's never plain sailing at the top or the bottom. We've got the Kagoshima Gifu game, haven't we, that's coming up. Is it next midweek?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
next.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that's kind of a postponed game with implications potentially at the bottom, and it's kind of good to have a game with implications at the top, sort of joining that on the sort of titillating schedule permutations that are coming up. So yeah, I think I don't think it's a surprise to say that Omeo are much more disappointed that the game didn't go ahead than Fukuoka would have been. But even so, the fixture congestion can be a problem either way. So we'll see when the game gets rearranged. I don't think there are any free weekends in J2 generally, so it will be a midweek game, I suspect. But yeah, we'll see. I guess they still have a few weeks to sort of wriggle around and get a date. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
We will. And something else we'll do is we'll take this match day in chronological order. Like I said, it was staggered over four different days. And so on last Saturday, we had three games. I think the one with the biggest implications, either at the top or the bottom, was Renofa Yamaguchi's 1-0 win against Kyoto Sanga. We mentioned last week, John, that Kyoto were looking a little bit ropey when they lost a 2-goal lead at home to Ehime FC. And this week, a late Junichi Paolo Tanaka goal, a really good finish, actually, from a long pass through, condemned Kyoto to another defeat. In the recent past, we've kind of said that Mito could be the team to slip out, and we'll touch on them later. But at the moment, it's looking like Kyoto are the ones that are losing their what once looked a solid grip on a playoff place. It looks like it's could be slipping away from them.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was another disappointing, not only a result but a kind of display from Kyoto, looking a little bit leggy. And we talked during the summer pods that maybe when the weather cooled down a little bit, they'd regain some energy, because they're kind of football is based on playing at a very frenetic pace. Perhaps not the most complicated tactics, but certainly speed and quick passing is essential to them being successful. I think for me, the surprise about that game was that they just switched off completely with 12 minutes left. I mean, they hadn't played particularly well and hadn't made the most of their chances, but I think they should have closed out that match and got at least a draw. But as you mentioned, it was a quick thinking, quickly taken free kick, long ball downfield, and that was kind of a feature of the match day, actually. There was quite a few teams getting caught out with quickly taken free kicks, in stadiums up and down the country, really. But yeah, I think if you're the manager, okay, you'll accept that you're not going to play well, you're not going to win the game. Very frustrating for the team to just sort of basically switch off and stop defending, sort of in the last 10 minutes. But yes, great finish from Junichi Paolo, as you said. And I think, yeah, Kyoto just really need a reaction. They're hosting Yokohama FC, aren't they, coming up this weekend. Any more dozy defending and they'll be sure to be punished, I think.
Yeah, they've got a wicked run of games coming up. Wicked as in the bad meaning, not the cool meaning of it. They've got Yokohama this week, then they're away at Niigata, and then they host Kofu in their next three games. I mean, those three games will go a long way to decide whether they're in contention for a playoff place, unless we forget their final game of the season is away at Kashiwa Reysol. So it's not all plain sailing for Ichizo Nakata and Kyoto Sanga. We'll touch on Jeff as well. I mean, their win, they won 2-0 at Nagasaki because, of course, I mean, they kept a clean sheet, and why not? Because that's just what they do. They like to make mockeries of certain people's predictions. Two goals, probably killing off Nagasaki's playoff hopes.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I actually think... In my heart of hearts, I was already counting Nagasaki out before this game. To repeat myself from previous pods, it's difficult to count out a team that has a striker like Hiroto Goya. And perhaps we could say the same about Kyoto with Kazunari Ichimi. You know, as long as you've got a player like that, you've always got half a chance of getting a goal, winning a game. But yeah, I think Nagasaki are just going to fall short this year. I think they're only the 6 points off the playoffs, but the six games to go. So yeah, that'll be too much for them to too much of a gap for them to bridge. I think from a Jeff point of view, we've reached the point where I think even for Jeff fans, comfortably controlling and winning a difficult away game is still quite annoying because it demonstrates kind of the potential that the team has, and it's frustrating to see them only play well in patches and only play well when there's not really anything riding on the game, if you like. Good goal from Kleber. The second one was a very nice volley from Yuki Horigome's corner. He'd scored the first pretty much standing on the goal line, but he did well to anticipate the ball sort of breaking onto the goal line and then sort of forcing it in. It's not often you see Jeff players displaying that kind of determination to get a goal, I think, if you like. So definitely encouraging signs. And I think there's some rumours about a potential new manager for Jeff Stewart, which you can shed some light on. If he was watching that game or even the highlights, he might be more inclined to take that job if it's offered, I think.
Yeah, I think the person that you're referring to, John, is Yoon Jung-hwan, the ex-Seretse Osaka and Sagan Tosu manager, who has been linked with the Jeff job in Korean sports newspapers over this past week. I mean, he's a big name. He obviously, I think he won Seretse's first major trophy with them, and I think it almost makes too much sense, which means that Jeff might not pull the trigger. I think someone like him and someone with his pedigree and track record of taking kind of workman-like teams, which Tosu were and which latterly Seretse were, they became a hard-working side under him. I think he would be a really good addition to Jeff. Whether he can cure the malaise, which seems a little bit kind of deeper set than that, is a little bit kind of up in the air. But they definitely, I don't care what they say, they're definitely looking for a new manager. They're not going to keep their current manager going on next season. And I think Yoon Jung-hwan would be, if they could get him, I think he'd be a really good asset to that club. So maybe Yoon in, but there's a high profile person on his way. Well, definitely leaving the playing staff, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. Yuto Sato, the kind of evergreen, if you like, or ever-present club captain and midfielder, has announced he's going to retire from playing at the end of the season. I think he live-streamed a press conference to that effect on Twitter or YouTube or both. I'm very old. I don't know. earlier today. And yeah, as we were talking before recording, he's had a sort of great career at Jeff, pretty much one club man, I think.
I think he had a couple of years out, but
Mr. Jeff.
It doesn't affect his standing at the club.
No. I think it would be very interesting, as you alluded to, that it would be the logical thing to do would be to keep him on in sort of coaching capacity, perhaps as an assistant to some sort of high profile Korean manager with a proven track record.
Interesting.
But then again, we just assume that things are logical, and J2 and especially Jeff United do not always, as logic and Jeff United, not easy bedfellows. So we'll see, but it will be, I don't think he, I think he'd be open to staying on in a coaching capacity. So yeah, we'll see what develops there. But yeah, it's going to be very strange for me not to see his name on the substitute bench at Jeff, because it seems like, I think pretty much since I started watching the J League, he's been in the team or amongst the substitutes, usually sort of coming on for the last 10 minutes, regardless of what's happening in the game. good luck to him, whatever he does next. But I don't think we've heard the last of him somehow.
I don't think so either. Before we leave Nagasaki and Kyoto, I just want a one-word answer, okay? That's important in this question. Do you understand?
Yes.
Okay, right.
Was that the question?
So Kyoto have Kazunari Ichimi on loan from Gamba, and Nagasaki have Hiroto Goya on loan from Gamba. If you were Gamba and you had to choose one of them to recall to play next year, which one would you choose?
Goya.
Okay, right, on to the next one. So why?
He has done better in a worse team.
Ah, interesting. I think. Yeah.
And he has had fewer chances and has fewer creators around him, but has scored more goals with the fewer chances. So I think when you step up to a higher level, you need a player that converts a higher percentage of the available chances. And I think he's ready to do that. I have no stats to support this.
It's all right. It sounds right. No, I actually feel...
Are you going to sledge me on Twitter after this? You won't believe. The answer will surprise you.
It's just going to be a load of clickbait. You'll never guess what John Steele said. No, I'd go for the same, actually. I like Goya more as a marksman, as a goal-getter. I think Ichimi, I think he does a lot of good work. But I think if I had to put 100 yen on someone to score me a goal, it would be Goya, I think.
I think the real question is what the hell are Gamba doing letting these players go out on loan? They could probably come when they need them, yeah.
That's something for Ben and the boys to discuss on the big pod. Right. Jesus Christ. Right, here we go. Hands up. Last week on the pod, John, as I'm sure you remember, I said that...
Remind me.
that's good of you. I said that FC VQ manager Yasuhiro Higuchi had done an excellent job in getting them to 40 points, and that Tokyo Verdy hadn't improved at all under new manager Nagai Hideki since they canned Gary White. So what happened this weekend, John?
Verdy won 5-1 away.
Of course they did, yeah.
Yes, and Junki Koike, who is notorious for not really being able to finish, scored an extremely well-taken hat-trick. So I don't know if this was something to do with the kind of adverse weather conditions around the country, you know, some kind of silver bullet that caused these things to conflate. But
I think there were some adverse defending conditions, if Aussie will let me describe it that way.
I think Riku, they have two clean sheets in a row before this game. So they were due to let some in, weren't they?
Negative regression, yeah.
You can't keep Ryoji Fukui away from his own goal for too long. it was just one of those games. I think everything went right for Verdy, and especially I think what killed the game was just scoring two quick fire goals before half time. They were both set up by Clebinho, who we mention again and again has really improved the team since he's been added initially at right back, and then now he's playing on the right kind of side of a three-man midfield. But he chipped a ball over the top for Koike to make it 2-0. Then he kind of slid a through ball along the ground for Koki Morita, I think, to make it 3. Mm-hmm. And I think once it was 3-0 at half-time, there was no way back. We should add that the best goal of the game, and possibly the whole round, although there were some real crackers, was the consolation that Uejo scored for Ryukyu.
I'm not sure I've seen too many better goals this season than that. The height that ball dipped from, it looked like it was going like well over the bar.
Yeah, well, and then it just I love Naoto Kami Fukumoto, the Verdy keeper.
Say it again, Sam.
Yeah. But it's not often that he is literally standing there catching flies as the ball goes past him, and he just watched it whistle over his head. He had no business getting anywhere near it, quite rightly. Probably would have broken his arm if he'd
When I was a young goalkeeper, a long time ago, I used to get goalkeeping coaching from Steve Sherwood. Now, older older people might remember him as Watford goalkeeper in the 1984 FA Cup final. But latterly, he played out his days at Grimsby Town and became a coach and an insurance salesman, somewhat believably. But when I was coached by Steve Sherwood, he said, it doesn't matter what happens, you must always dive because you never know what will happen. He said you must never stand still. But if he had the pleasure of seeing Uejo's goal, I'm not sure he would have advised me to dive for that, because I think it was just going well over the bar. It just dipped so violently.
Yeah, it also came with pretty minimal backlift as well. There wasn't really much warning that he was going to do that. I just can't see any way that he's not playing in J1 next year. I know there was some Twitter back and forth about, as a statement of intent, Ryukyu must try and keep him. And I think that's true, but I don't know how lots of clubs are going to be phoning. Wanting this guy, I think. So we'll see. But absolutely brilliant goal.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Tokyo Verde, for making me look like a complete muppet again. Usually I don't need that much help. But those are the three games on Saturday. We had four games on Sunday. We'll take them as they come as well. I think there are some really big games with big implications on both ends of the table. Tokushima Vortis came from behind to beat fellow playoff chasing Fajiano Okayama in Tokushima. They were Tokushima 1-0 behind early from you know who. I barely even have to say his name anymore because he's in the news that often, but Hayato Nakama gave Okayama the lead. But Tokushima came from behind and they notched a very, very important 2-1 win after they dropped points at Tochigi last week. Speaking of Tochigi, they drew 1-1 at Van Fori Kofu. It could have been so much more for Tochigi, but they conceded a late equaliser to Brazilian striker Alano, which kind of, it's a good point for Tochigi, but after being in the lead for so long, they took the lead through Junya Osaki very early on. They might look at it as 2 points lost. Ehime FC, fresh off coming back from 2 goals down to draw at Kyoto last week, became Albirex Niigata's latest victims. Albirex are playing kind of some really interesting football right now. This is their third win in a row. They scored 10 goals in the last 3 games and they haven't conceded any yet in those 3 games. And so they're playing really well at the moment. And we'll come on to Niigata because we've got a little bit of a question about Niigata. We'll come on to them in just a little bit. The other final result on Sunday was Machida Zelvia 0, Kagoshima United 0. Kagoshima doing well to keep a clean sheet after they shipped 6 goals at Niigata last week. But John, a lot of the focus on this game was actually not on the field, it was off the field. Do you want to give a brief overview of why that was?
Yeah, I'm not sure I've got all the details, but as we've discussed a few times this season, Machida Zelvia are now majority owned by the internet. I don't really know, still not sure exactly what they do, but Cyber Agent is the name of the company, isn't it? And They submitted an application to the J-League to change the name of Machida Zelvia next season to FC Machida Tokyo. And the Tokyo part of that is going to be kind of rendered in katakana, not in kanji. So basically the medium difficulty phonetic script in Japanese, I think, would be the best way to describe it. This move has predictably been very unpopular with Machida supporters, especially because it's been done without any kind of pre-communication or consultation. There was a kind of fans forum meeting for Machida Zelvia supporters to attend with officials from CyberAge and from the club, but that was really just to explain the decisions that had already been taken, I think. And we also had a few, maybe a month or two ago, there were some leaked kind of images on Twitter of a new logo and mascot character. And I think, reading between the lines, it looks as though the club colours might also be changed from the kind of blue and black that they've had since the club started in sort of late 80s, back in the kind of JFL era. So, interesting times. There were a lot of kind of protest banners hung by Machida's kind of hardcore supporters behind home goal at the game on Sunday, which, the TV cameras tried their best to not give any coverage to. So it's interesting times. Obviously, CyberAge paid money, they own the club, they can sort of, it's their ball and they can take it home if they want to. It is quite surprising to me just to see in the sort of social media kind of PR age, clubs scoring such spectacular own goals, if you'll pardon the reference. I don't understand why this couldn't have been handled better. I think it kind of smacks of a certain high-handedness, I think. Maybe complacency that fans will just, they'll throw away all their merchandise with Zelvia branding and they will just start buying the new stuff. Especially for Machida fans, the Zelvia name is like derived from Zelkova, which is like Machida City's official flower. So there's a kind of sense of some of their identity being sort of stripped away. And what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, on one level, I think I've mentioned this several times before, I can understand the new owners wanting to put a more recognisable geographical marker on the team. But at the same time, like, I always thought they'd keep Zelvia, because it's one of the things that got me about that that supporters meeting was that the owner or the majority shareholder in the club, who obviously owns CyberAgent, said that in one of the exchanges with the support, he said Zelvia was difficult to remember for like businesses and other supporters and other people in the area. And he referenced Vivar and Nagasaki as well as a team that was difficult to remember. Now, Vivar and Nagasaki are owned by Akira Takata, who owns the huge online merchant store Japanet, and as far as I know, they have no plans to change the Vivaran in their name, and so I don't. He came across as a bit kind of unprepared for all the shit that was coming. Pardon my French. The shit that was coming his way, and I always thought they would keep Zelvia in the name. I thought they'd make Machida Zelvia Tokyo or Tokyo Machida Zelvia or something along those lines. I think actually taking the Zelvia part out of the official name is such a wrong move. It's crass, and it smacks of a kind of thinking that clubs... a club's history what a club has been through up until a certain point in time, they can just take that away. But they believe that even though the Zelvia name's gone, that people will still hark back to the good old days of Zelvia, Aussie Ardiles and getting promotion and things like that. I think there's a chance they walk it back. I know we talked a little bit before we came on air. I think there's a chance that they revisit this because I'm genuinely not sure that they were prepared for this amount of kind of pushback from the fans. And I don't like it. Actually, I think. Like I said, I can completely understand from a business point of view why you would want Tokyo in your club's name, but just to disregard, it's like changing, because you mentioned it there as well, changing a club's colour. I mean, it's Blue has always been, as far as I know, I mean, I've followed the J League for about 10 years. Machida have always been blue. I just think if they end up changing that as well, and if they end up taking Zelvia out, it's, you know, it's what are you giving current supporters to hold on to? Because now the name's not there. A lot of the merchandising is going to be different from what they've purchased in the past. Yeah, I'm not a fan of it.
Well, I think just piggybacking on that, it seems like a poorly thought through decision when you think that there are other things related to Machida Zelvia that are branded with Zelvia. So like Zelvia Kitchen is like the restaurant that operates fairly close to the stadium. The mascot Zelvi Land is the name of the pre-match sort of entertainment area that operates in the sort of car parking lot outside Nozita. So it's been poorly thought out and poorly handled. I also think we should maybe attach a little bit of blame or responsibility on the J League, because this was announced as kind of like cyber agent has applied to change a name, and it had been accepted within like immediately. That was the whole press release. There wasn't any press release that they'd applied to change a name and the J League was thinking about it or checking it out. And I think this is a bit different to when Thespa Kusatsu added Gunma to their name, or when Consadole Sapporo added Hokkaido to their name. It's because you're not adding something, you're kind of taking something away. And I think the J League, one thing, when the J League was first formed as a kind of reaction against sort of corporatism of pro baseball in Japan, and to try and kind of engender sort of hometown communities, you know, company names weren't allowed to be used in the team names. And I think maybe the J League just needs to be a bit more careful about protecting its heritage, if you like. Like if I was running the J League, there would be a rule that your team had to have like a made-up katakana word in the team name, something like that. Like I wouldn't allow any ordinary names. It'd have to be something weird. You know, like it'd have to be FC Gifu something, you know, or Jeff United something. But I'm being ridiculous. But yeah, playing fast and loose with identity is a very difficult thing to get right. And the J League's got this wrong historically. For example, by allowing the Yokohama Flugels to merge with the Marinos, by allowing Tokyo Verde to move from Kawasaki to Tokyo. So they basically, in my opinion, they like killed one club and almost killed another already. And that's just in the kind of Tokyo sort of metropolitan area. So I think it would have been good for the J League maybe to be like, are you sure about this? You know, and just maybe let them maybe say like, yes, with consultation with the fans, if season ticket holders vote for it, you can do it or something. So yeah, it's a tricky one. I would also add, as you'll know from seeing the download numbers for the pod, I'm not a PR person, but one, the absolute best way to get good PR is to hold your hands up when you've made a mistake. Yes. And I'm thinking about Leeds United's new badge here. Where anyone who wants to learn more about it can just Google. But that was the most sort of cringe-worthy reveal video I think I've ever seen. The fan reaction was so negative that Leeds United, like, this is not a club over the past decade or so which has been marching in step with fans in terms of ticket prices and whatever else. But they were just like, hey, we got this completely wrong. And sorry, it's going away, and it's not coming back. You know, we're not going to force this through in a watered down version. We're not determined to shove it down your throats. You don't want it. We get that. It's dead.
Yeah.
And yes, I think there seems to be a bit too much hubris about Cyber Agent for that to happen here. But clubs being at odds with their hardcore supporters is never a good look.
Yeah, you're quite right.
I just think there must be a better way of handling it than of handling it than how it's been handled up to this point. But we will see.
We will see. of those other games I mentioned, Tokushima beating Okayama, Niigata winning in Ehime and Kofu and Tochigi drawing, is there any one of those games that you want to talk a little bit about before we move on to Mondays?
Well, I mentioned very briefly, I think even though it was a very important win for Tokushima, I think them and Okayama are both still in the playoff chase. So it wasn't a critical knockout blow either way for me. I thought that standard of goalkeeping was poor in this game. I know Ichimori has been pretty good for Okayama this season. In fact, excellent, but he could have done better with both of the goals that he conceded, I think, in this game. And it's perhaps unfair to single him out, but Okayama have been going well recently. They were perhaps due a defeat, and they haven't lost in maybe five or six before this one. Vortis seem to be doing I'll call it a reverse Vortis, because they're normally good in the first half of the season,
yeah,
and then blow up at the end. But it seems like it could be, and perhaps Ricardo Rodriguez has just, you know, inverted the polarity this year. They seem to be coming good at the right time. It's going to be a ding-dong battle, I think, to see if either of these two can grab a top six spot. I would add Kofu into the mix. Yeah, I think they were a bit disappointing in this game. They let in the early goal, as you mentioned, against Tochigi, which looked offside to me. Yeah, I've seen that there are numerous replays, but none of them were from the right angle for me to make sure. But yeah, I think the telltale sign was most of the Kofu defenders had their arms up, and most of the Tochigi players were looking at the linesman to see if he was going to give it. And even poor old Tasaka, the Tochigi manager, looked just absolutely stunned, and I think he took him a few minutes to start clapping, because he doesn't expect to see his team taking the lead away at Kofu either. And then they were reliant on Alano, weren't they, coming off the bench and heading an equaliser. So, yeah, very disappointing result for them. But again, I think it's still all to play for. So none of those three teams are out of it just yet.
What about Albrecht's Niigata? Johnny Nicol on Twitter asked me if I thought Niigata were in with a chance of making the playoffs. They are, if I just get the league table up, they are, what are they? Albrecht's Niigata are 7 points off sixth place. I personally think that's too much. I think that requires them winning their final six games, and it's a shame they've left it too late, because like going forward they're a joy to watch, basically. But I just think I just think they've left it too late. And if we're counting out Nagasaki, then I think we should count out Niigata.
I think that there's probably enough good players in the Niigata team that it could be yes to the playoffs. But I think the reason they've been winning and playing so well in the last couple of games is because they've already given up on making the playoffs, and playing with that kind of freedom that you have, that Jeff United had, for example, in Nagasaki. And I think if they got to the point where they were within a win of the top six, I've just got a feeling that they might find that a difficult hurdle to get over mentally. So I think, yeah, they just seem to have clicked. Like Silvino and Leonardo, for example, got a very good understanding. But it's not just about the Brazilian players. Obviously the Japanese players in the team are working well together. But yeah, I think you mentioned that they've won three in a row and scored 10. But I mean, six of them were in that game against Kagoshima. So that's it. I think I would have fancied myself scoring a couple against that defense. Augusti Breeze would have got a couple against that them in that game. So yeah, they're a very good team to watch at the moment. Definitely enough quality players for them to be in the playoffs, but I agree they've left it too late. And I think if they got to the verge of the playoff places, they would find the pressure difficult to cope with. I don't think they're ready for that. And it's a shame, because of if they can keep the core of that team together, they could have a really good go next year. But I'm sure that Leonardo will be moved on. And then it's a question of how many other players they can sort of recruit, or how much of the core of this season's team they can keep. But yeah, they definitely turned it around. I wasn't sure about them in the first half of the season. Proved that they were a good side in the second half. But yeah, I agree with you. It's just a bit too late.
Mm. Okay, let's move on to the games that took place on Monday, which was a public holiday in Japan as well. There are two games that took place on Monday. Monterrey Yamagata beat FC Gifu 2-0 in a very routine win for Yamagata, which keeps them in the thick of an automatic promotion hunt. And the big game of the day was that Kashiwa Reysol were somewhat surprisingly, possibly, Kashiwa Reysol were beaten 3-2 at home by Mito Hollyhock. John, I don't want to talk about Gifu. It was rubbish. That's all you need to know. Goals from Yanagi and Haruya Ide sealed a very easy win. And Sakamoto had a second half penalty saved by Gifu goalkeeper Yano Lisivas. But Gifu still rooted at the bottom. Yamagata looking good at the top. I think we can move on from there. So Mito winning at Kashiwa Reysol on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being very surprised, 1 being not very surprised, where does this result rank?
I would say it's a 7 or an 8.
Okay.
And I think we might have done Mito a disservice in previous recent pods where we've suggested that they are wilting and on their way out of the playoff picture after having such a good season. You don't get to win away at Kashiwa if you're not on the money, if you're not on top of your game. So yeah, fair play to them. I think this was probably one of the best games in J2 this season in terms of goals and incident and drama. I think I knew we were in for a good game when Yuta Somea scored from about 15 yards. It's not often that happens, but he managed to do it to put Kashiwa 1-0 up. It may be, I mentioned him a few times, but Olunga missing for Kashiwa because he's on international away on the international duty. I think obviously Kashiwa got such a sort of talented side that they shouldn't really miss him, but I think they do. But I don't want to take anything away from Mito because even after going 1-0 down early on, they roared back and they went 2-1 up with two absolutely stunning goals. I don't know if you want to describe them for the listeners. It's definitely worth checking them out on YouTube. Kimura with that kind of flicked back heel,
yep,
which just couldn't have been executed any better if it was Cristiano Ronaldo, just magical. And then the free kick that was scored. I'm still not really sure how that happened.
Yeah,
I watched it a few times, but I can't work it out.
Yeah, it's. I mean.
Is there a problem with Nakamura's position on that, do you think?
I don't be
happy with being beaten from there.
No. There's not. It's difficult because he's not expecting it, I don't think. He's not expecting it to go where it did. And I just think that, I think recently he's looked a lot more vulnerable, and I just think that, yeah, recently they've begun to get a little bit a little bit more exposed. I think if you maybe teams are playing with less fear at them because they haven't been all conquering recently in the past couple of months or so.
Do you think that anxiety of being quite close to
quite possibly
clinching?
Yeah, because
getting to them,
because it's happened to teams before, right? Sean and Belmare, Almir, Ardija have had the same thing happen to them. I think I think Kosuke Nakamura, I think he's expecting it to be crossed, and he's expecting it to be somewhere in between the penalty area, the penalty spot, and the 6-yard area. So he's expecting an outswinging cross. Could he have? Yeah, he possibly could have done better, but I wouldn't hold it too much against him because, yeah, for a right footer to take that free kick, I think he's expecting it to be crossed into the box. That's what I would say about it.
Yeah, it was a stunning kind of quite a gutsy attempt. I think I'm not sure I'd have the confidence to try that in a game of that magnitude, but yeah, but it was 2-2 even at half time, wasn't it? Because Cristiano put Kashiwa back on level terms. I think at that point you're expecting Kashiwa to go on and win it. But yeah, credit, we've got to give credit to Mito, as we have done so many times this season. They ended up grabbing a winner through Shintaro Shimizu, who kind of half volleyed the ball into the turf, but I think it was intentional. I think that's what he intended to do.
It looked that way because it looked because the
and went in.
Yeah, because the surface was greasy and it just picked up speed as it skimmed across the surface. Right?
Yes, we should add that this was post typhoon, but it was still rainy. In Kashua. And I think when that goal went in, it was in front of the travelling Mito fans, and there was a proper kind of European style roar to celebrate the goal, which for anyone that outside Japan who's never been to a stadium here, that's actually quite rare.
It is, yeah.
There's like a really visceral reaction to a goal being scored. Japanese fans tend to, maybe it's because of the baseball supporter culture, I don't know, but they sort of, if you're being unkind, they kind of drone on almost regardless, like in isolation of what's happening on the pitch sometimes. If you look closely when you're watching
highlights... Does that apply to us as well?
Well, yeah, I think, yeah. There must be a reason why I chose the word drone, yeah. But, you know, you sometimes see, like, as your team concedes a goal, like the sort of capo, like fan leaders, will still be sort of drumming and shouting into their megaphones, even as the ball kind of travels into the back of the net, and it's not the kind of stony silence that you get at European grounds. But yeah, that was I really enjoyed seeing the Mito fans basically losing their shit. So yeah, brilliant match, and Kashua sort of continuing their sort of not slump but wobble, I think, after losing at Yokohama the week before. So I still think they'll be promoted. They obviously got too many good players, and they're longer to come back, you know, for the next game.
Two wins from the last seven, and defeats against Yamagata, Yokohama, and Mito.
Yeah, it's just it's this weird thing that they've been top for so long that I think in my head they've been like I've promoted them in my head.
Yeah,
and I think maybe one or two of the players were thinking the same thing. But it's funny looking at the table week by week and seeing that lead just slowly being cut down. If you think Omiya now have a game in hand on them as well, with that postponement with the game against Fukuoka, and I'm sorry to Fukuoka fans, Omiya are probably going to win that game in hand. It starts to look dicey. I think the problem is, you know, if the pressure's there now, then that pressure's only going to ramp up over the next sort of, you know, five or six rounds. What I will say, arguing against myself, is that they do have the experience in terms of the coach, Nelsinho, players like Cristiano that should see them over the line, I think. But it's not going to be as comfortable or as sort of, it's not going to be as much of a possession as we thought it might be.
Well, four wins will see them promoted. And in four of their final six games, they've got Jeff, Fukuoka, Kagoshima and Machida. And the other two are Omiya and Kyoto. So I see them, especially when Alunga comes back, I see them picking up 12 points from their final final six games. So
I think they'll have to be a hell of an inquest if they don't.
If they don't.
Position, I think, yeah.
What's the Chiba Derby next week?
And at the moment, it's probably two of the most unpredictable teams in the league.
Yeah.
Going up against each other in a game where form usually doesn't count for anything, so God only knows what will happen. There must be something in it, because I hear that the J-League King is going to be there, you know, the original mascot from back in 1980, a sort of horrific-looking humanoid with a soccer ball for a head. I'm not describing myself, that's what J-League King looks like. I'd much rather have Miki Sato, but we get this... this apparition instead. Still, never mind.
Never mind indeed. So the final game of the weekend took place on Tuesday night when Yokohama FC hosted Zweigen Kanazawa, and it finished 3-2 to Yokohama, but that barely tells the story of what happened. Iba gave Yokohama the lead from close range, but goals from Yamamoto and Clooney put Kanazawa back in front. Yuki Kusano, who's been in the goals recently, leveled things up with 10 minutes to go, ish, and it looked very suspiciously like handball in the build-up, and a penalty in the fifth minute of injury time at the end of the game. Again, it didn't look like a penalty for me. I don't know what you think about it. But he showed, to be fair to him, he showed nerves of steel. It was obviously going to be the last kick of the game. Huge 3 points for Yokohama FC. And yeah, to say Kanazawa manager Masaki Yanagishita was nonplussed in the post-match interviews would be to disrespect the word nonplussed. He was in all but calling out the referee. He was enraged at the handball and he was enraged at the penalty, and he let the DAZN interviewer know about it. And if looks could kill, that's the vibe that I got from Yanagishita. But this is a huge 3 points for Yokohama FC to keep the pressure on Omiya and Kasha at the top of the table, right?
Yeah, and I think, first of all, I'll say I didn't think we were going to have a post-match interview better slash worse than the Gifu manager Kitano's one so soon. But that's like an interesting subplot of angry post-game interviews that's developing, which I appreciate. Yeah, this game was 3-2, and it was, on the face of it, a humdinger. I think Kanazawa played extremely well. It's kind of still, they must still be trying to work out how they ended up with nothing from this game after causing Yokohama all sorts of problems and being 2-1 up, as you said, with 10 minutes to go. Yeah, it's interesting the way that the game finished. And I think for Kusano, when I started to watch Yokohama FC, they were this team of like aging veterans with no pace. And it was obvious that they were just crying out for some more direct kind of players to get the ball down and run at people. To be honest, younger players. And they have that now. And it's been brilliant to see the likes of Nakayama down the left, Matsuo down the right. And they've something that they've done brilliantly. And I have to take my hat off to the manager, Shimomura. He has kind of blended these young, enthusiastic guys with the experience of the likes of, you know, Iba and Leandro Dominguez in a very, very pleasing fashion. And Yuki Kusano is also a kind of free-running, aggressive, youngish player by Japanese standards. But yeah, I think he was involved in some dark arts, I think, to win this game. I think it's clearly, it was, for my money, it was a handball in the build-up to his equaliser that made it 2-2. I think we're into the realms now of where the way that the handball rule is it's not equal for defenders and forwards, because if a defender had done the same thing and the referee had seen it, it would have been a penalty. But I don't know whether the referee missed it or he thought it had taken the ball on his chest. But I think that was a real legitimate shout for a handball. Probably should have been a free kick. And then, yeah, for the penalty, I don't know. I'm basically anti-VAR.
Mm.
But this game was the last 10 minutes certainly were a really compelling case for VAR. Because I think if the referee had had a chance to see that again, or a video official had reviewed it, I don't think that penalty would have been given. There was kind of half a foul on Kusano inside the box, and then another player just arrived on the scene and dispossessed him, and then he, realising that the chance had gone, how should we put it, Stuart, made the most of the contact.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the referee bought it and went for the penalty. It's the sort of thing that happens when you're near the top of the table and 17 games unbeaten.
And at home.
Yeah, I know it's strange to describe Yokohama FC as the big club. They're not exactly Urawa, but in the context of this game and this season, they kind of are.
Mm.
They have Shunsuke Nakamura in the team, for goodness sake. But yeah, I think it left a bit of a... obviously, I like seeing Yokohama FC up challenging, because it's quite one of my sort of local teams, if you like, in my sphere of influence. But the way they won this match was very, very divisive, I think, from a purist point of view. Yeah, I think it probably wasn't. Well, for my money, it definitely wasn't a penalty. But yeah, I was surprised that Kusano was allowed to take it.
Mm.
Like, if there's no way I would have, if I was the manager and I saw him pick up the ball, I'd be like, no, Yeah, because Leandro Dominguez was still on the pitch.
He was still on the pitch, yeah.
So, yeah, so, yeah, I don't know if that was there. But, yeah, as you said, nerves of steel. But, yeah, I think, I don't know, 18 games unbeaten for Karma FC now, isn't it? I think the sort of momentum seems to be drawing them towards the top of the table. They're extremely fortunate to win this match. And they'll have to, they won't be able to rely on luck of that magnitude, I think, for the next six games. They'll have to play a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree with that, but momentum counts for so much, and they've obviously got that in spades. And yeah, you just look at, they've got Kyoto next, Tokyo Verde, Nagasaki, Tokushima, Okayama. They've got some teams kind of that there's no quote unquote big teams left, I think. So I think 15 points would be enough for them. I would posit at this point.
Do you think they could go unbeaten for the rest of the season?
I think they could. Sorry, Yokohama FC fans, but
yeah, there goes the neighbourhood.
Yeah.
But I will say that their record against Tokyo Verde is pretty poor historically. So it'd be very interesting to see how that stacks up against their current form when they go head to head in a couple of weeks' time.
They did beat them last time out, which was
That is true. But I think Verdi might not be right. I'm pretty sure Verdi got the upper hand in sort of you know, head to head historically. Mm. But yes, they're definitely a better team than Verdi this year for sure.
Okay. Well, let's wrap up this J2 lark with a look at the fixtures coming up this weekend. So they take place on Saturday and Sunday this week. Then there's four games on Saturday. The rest of the games take place on Sunday. I think we've already spoken. There are some kind of very important games this weekend. Obviously, the Chiba Derby is big at the top. Olmi are hosting Tokushima in a big game. We've just spoken about Kyoto and Yokohama. Anything that we should be watching out for, John, this weekend?
No, I'd say that Olmi game, you're right to point out, is a big one. I think Olmi will be well rested, obviously, after the postponement in the last round. The game's at Kumagaya at the weekend, not NAC 5. So Olmi usually play, I think, one or two home games a season in kind of deepest Saitama at Kumagaya, which is pretty unpopular, I think, with most fans. That's the athletic stadium that has the running track. So whether that will have any bearing on the game is doubtful, but it's a possibility. Yeah, I think the game of the round on Saturday is probably that Kyoto versus Yokohama FC match. And then, yeah, it's hard to look beyond the Chiba Derby on Sunday, just because I think, yes, Reysol probably will get promoted, and that means this is probably the last league derby for a little while. Jeff don't seem very keen on returning to J1 anytime soon.
Yeah, I would say that as well. Just before we wrap up, John, we should probably have a look at J3. Asking for a friend, so to speak. So at the top we've got a three-way tie at the top between Zaspa, Kasatsu Gunma, Giravansk Kitakyushu and Fujieda. Gunma actually conceded a goal in stoppage time in their draw at Blaublitz Akita at the weekend. Fujieda won 1-0 at home against Kamata Marisaniki, and Giravansk Kitakyushu won 2-1 at home against Gruzia Iwate Morioka. I think the one thing that I should probably mention about this is that this kind of title race in J3, this promotion race in J3, has implications on the J2 relegation battle, in so much as that Fujieda, at time of recording, don't have a J2 license. Zaspa Kasatsu do, Giravansk Kitakyushu do, Raso Kumamoto, who are in fourth place, do as well, but Fujieda don't. And so that brings into focus, should they finish in one of the top two places, it could mean a reprieve for one of the bottom two in J2. It would mean a reprieve for the 21st place team in J2. And so that's something to keep an eye on as the clock ticks down in J3. Just to give you a heads up. This weekend, Gunma are in Tottori, Kitakyushu are playing Numazu, and Roasso Kumamoto host Fujieda on Sunday. John, any other business we should speak about?
No, I think we've covered everything. I will just perhaps give a shout out to Consadole Sapporo, or Hokkaido Consadole Sapporo, to give them their fully branded name, because they've reached the final of the Levan Cup, where they'll take on Kawasaki Frontale. A lot of news reports seem to be mentioning this is their Hokkaido or Sapporo's first final or first chance of a title. I don't know. I'm sure they won J2 maybe in the past. So, like, my sort of anorak in me wants J2 to be recognised as a major title. But perhaps I think I'm swimming against the tide on that one. But yeah, the Levan Cup final at the end of this month will be Kawasaki against Sapporo in Saitama. So it should be a good occasion, a good atmosphere, and a good game.
Well said, that man. Okay, so I've come to the end of this podcast. John, if people want to get in touch with you and let you know about your bad predictions, where should they speak to you?
You can catch up with me at J2CantoBytes on Twitter. Apologies if there were audio issues on the pod last week, by the way. Some people reached out to mention that on Twitter. So we're kind of doing a few checks and tests, and maybe we'll be improving the microphones at some point. So, apologies if that was an issue. What about you, Stuart? Where can people ask you questions and point things out?
So you're going to say taunt you then?
I wavered.
I'm at sushi_football. If you've got any questions for us, if you've got any kind of queries about J2 or J3, or if you just want to suggest topics for us, I know Navy Blue Wasp wants us to speak about Fukuoka a bit more. We will. I promise you, we will. Soon. It's coming.
I think the season review might be the time.
It's coming. It's coming. Don't worry, Navy Blue Wasp. It's mm-hmm. It's on its way. So that's all from us tonight. We wish you a safe and happy J2 viewing experience this weekend, and hopefully we'll catch you in the same place this time next week. Thank you to everyone who's listening, and I should say a big thank you to the Patreons who obviously make this happen. And you know, if you do feel the need, and not do feel the need, Jesus, if you want to contribute to what we do, please feel free to visit the Patreon page and donate. Yeah, it can be as little as $1 per month, and it'll help John and I produce podcasts of this caliber. So don't let that put you off. Please donate, and we'll keep this J2 pod going. Until next week, we'll speak to you then. Goodbye for now.